In the name of God, who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Amen.
I know. First response is, yay, he's not going to sing the sermon. I get it. It's a little nasally right now due to allergies. I get it. So there's a couple of interesting things about the readings today. You know, this goes through our cycle repeatedly. And honestly, when people come up against it, it's, oh man, here comes the ask, right? You don't need money because the love of money is bad, so give it to us. That's actually not what this is. Let me give you a couple observations, because I've always found these passages fascinating, both in Timothy with the love of money, especially coupled with the parable that we have of the poor man and the rich man, right? So, I think we can all agree that the love of money, money for money's sake, is actually a path to all kinds of evil things. The ownership of money, the ownership of even a lot of money, is not bad in and of itself. But let me go back to my childhood when I was in school. You know, you get into middle school or even the earliest years of high school, and you're talking, you know, you go more into depth about world history and stuff like that. I remember hearing about India and their caste system. Whatever you were born into, you never advanced, you never retreated. Not in this life. But maybe you'll do better in the next one. Because you have to do it over. Great. I remember reading about places like China, who at their youngest children would give tests. And wherever you excelled the most at in those tests when you were 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, well, that set the course for your school career forever. Again, a caste system. You didn't break out of it. You know, at least in China, I guess you actually had a little bit of an ability to break out of it, but it was very hard to do. So there are these ideas of caste systems. The rich stays rich and the poor stays poor, and never shall the two meet, right? So we know that that exists in the world. But what does it look like here in America? Well, let's examine that a little bit. Let me give you some of my observations on that as well. We have a great industry here, right? We're a very industrious nation. We do a lot of manufacturing, right? You know that my father and I both worked in the steel mills, as did some of you in the church. The steel mills, it's very easy to see that for their love of money, they cut corners, right? They lay off workers. They fudge on the EPA stuff, right? I remember just before I left the steel mills, they had an article that was, I think, run in the Post that was talking about the measures that U.S. Steel had put in place for some of the pollutants from manufacturing. And they were being called out by the EPA, you know. We gave you these recommendations to do. You're supposed to have them in place. You know, if you did these, you would be 100% compliant. Their response to that was, we don't care if we're compliant. Are we measurably better? Because that's what meets the requirements. So it's the bare minimum, right? You go through and they're doing the bare minimum to save that money. Again, the root of all kinds of evil is love of money. Now, on the flip side of that, I will say that U.S. Steel used to be very good about giving back to the community that they were in, trying to raise Gary up. But it's kind of that idea, even in our own lives. You know, there are people, stop and think about it now. When you have people come over to your house, or when you interact with people, are they like you, or are they different? I remember one of the most shocking things for myself, and this happened a few years ago. there was a guy that was homeless. He had a dog. I didn't realize he was a vet at the time. I had seen him over in Valpo walking by Best Buy, and he was checking garbage cans, so I knew he was homeless. Like, man, I got to stop and help that guy, and I fell into my own world, and I passed him by. And later on, there's an article that comes out about him and about how he didn't have any money. About how he went from garbage can to find food for his dog. Didn't really care about himself because he had a tumor that was sticking out of his stomach on his liver. So he wasn't long for the world, but he had this companion. When I heard that story, when I read it, I immediately thought of the story of Lazarus and the rich man. I cannot deny at that time that I was the rich man. Not intentionally so, maybe, but it still happened. That guy, no, that wasn't a Freudian slip. That guy was very much like Lazarus. This is a vet that had gone through and protected our country. He had seen combat. He had seen battle. He'd lost his home. His only companion, the only person that would really give him a time of day because he was not like other people. He wasn't finely dressed. He wasn't normally dressed. He wore what he had. He did what he had to do. This was someone that protected our country and our freedoms. And it's very easy to walk past. Now, let me be very clear. I'm not calling anybody out about this. But I know that we've all done it because it's human nature. It's tribalism. We begin to look for those that are like us. And when we begin to look for those that are like us, when we begin to congregate into those groups, we miss the rest of the world. We miss the people around us. I remember in seminary, there was St. Luke's in Racine, Wisconsin. They had Deacon Kevin. And he was a freshly minted deacon. And he's put in charge of this huge, amazing church, Episcopal church, marble floor, stonework, very Gothic style, with hardly anybody in it. But there were people that were well off that were in it. There were people that were well off that were kept it going. Father or Deacon Kevin one time started off, he couldn't figure out what to do. How do you reach out to the congregation? How do you help the Lazaruses of the world? How is the church supposed to respond to that? So he went outside one night and he was trying to clear his head and think about it. And he began to look around. And this is the middle of winter. He began to look around. And there's homeless people all over. So he sat down and he started talking to them. What can the church do for you? What would make a difference in your life? He began having a warming shelter that ended up turning into basically a prayer vigil because the city tried to shut the warming shelter down. They didn't want those people in their beautiful city. I found it interesting. There was a bar right next to the church, and the people would leave the bar and throw their bottles on the church lawn. The homeless people would go pick up those bottles, take them to the recycling, get as much money as they can. They would turn around and they'd give it back to St. Luke's. They'd give it back to Kevin. Every penny. You go in and you begin to meet these people, and let's be honest, there was some really pungent odors. Some were uneducated. Some couldn't even read. They were people that had been passed by constantly. Constantly looking for a break. But you begin to talk to them and you realize they are just like you. They are different only because of circumstance. Some were actually very highly educated. So we used to bring food, we used to bring clothes. You sat down and you had conversation. We had we did all-nighters, prayer vigils, so we stayed there with them. You always brought cartons of cigarettes because they couldn't afford it. You began to get to know these people and you would do anything you could to help them. And there was one particular time where this really hit home. And this is, in fact, the story of Lazarus and the rich man. There was a funeral that was going on at St. Luke's for one of their prestigious families, which is where I met a guy by the name of Father Miracle. No joke, that his last name was Miracle. So he was called Father Miracle. But Deacon Kevin knew that I came from the Shota house, that I was trained in incense and everything else. And he says, you know, these guys really want an Anglican burial for this prestigious member. Would you go over and do the incense? I said, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I'm going to do what I've got to do for the incense. I'm going to come right back. So I did. I walked over because I always showed up in my cassock anyway. I borrowed one of their katas and did the incense for the funeral. And I came back in to the homeless shelter. And there was one family. Out of all the people that were there, there was one family that crossed the barrier from the church to the greeting hall where the homeless were. And the interesting thing was, they crossed the barrier not to find out what was going on, but to thank me for doing what I did for their deceased member. And I made the comment, well, you're welcome. It's my pleasure to do it, but that's, you know, I didn't come here for you. I came here for them. And it was like their eyes opened. It was the first time that they had looked around and actually seen that there were other people in the room. It's amazing how that happens, but it's a very common thing. These people don't walk in the shadows, but they're seen as always being in the shadows. And now here's this husband and wife that came over to thank me. Her wearing gold jewelry, a very expensive dress. Him wearing what can only be a couple $1,000 suit. Recognizing that there's actually other people in the room. They began to talk. They began to interact with these people. They began to have conversations. They began to realize the same thing that had drawn me to St. Luke's, which is my own stupidity, really. My own desire to continue on in the path and the custom that I was always used to. Those two people actually became great supporters of St. Luke's, and we began to see them there every time we would go back. Everybody pitched in to help, and it was amazing. You had a group of people that had literally nothing, came in to actually do cleanup in the sink, to have a warm place to sleep, to have access to computers, to even begin to look for jobs. Just to give you an idea of the types of people that you run into in these situations, you have addicts that have lost jobs, including both drugs and alcohol. You have people that have been bankrupted. You have many vets. You have people that have issues like Asperger's or epilepsy that can't necessarily function totally in a daily life. The most fascinating people were people such as one gentleman who basically had it all. He actually had lots of money, had a beautiful house, was set. He was good. And his wife died. And the way that he responded to that was he couldn't deal. He couldn't even figure out how to deal. So he walked out the front door. Literally walked away from everything he owned. And was trying to find his way back. He became so broken that he ended up at a place like St. Luke's. The church talks about the story of Lazarus and the rich man, and we talk about money as the root of all kinds of evil. But what do we do with it? Where are the homeless people that come into our doors or that even know to come into our doors? Where's the community interaction with that? It actually may surprise you all to know that on many mornings, when it gets colder, I will come into the church and I will go downstairs. And I will discover that someone has been using the restroom. And I will discover that someone has slept on the couch. That they have neatly folded a blanket that they were using to finally get warm. To have a place out of the rain and the snow. To be protected. They've never asked for anything. But they do things around the church to make it a little better that you probably don't even realize. There are supplies that sometimes show up. They try to clean up their area. They try to clean up or do things that they see they can do in thanks for having the ability to do that. We weren't born into a caste society. Christianity is not about caste. It's not about privilege. It's not about anything but Christ. Christ giving us this parable of Lazarus and the rich man should hit us hard. It should open our eyes. It's not what the world does for the church. It's what the church can do for the hurting and broken world that we find ourselves walking through. It is where we find our equalness with every human being made in the image of God. The Episcopal Church actually prides itself on talking about the dignity of every human being. It's part of our baptismal vows. It's part of our vows as a Christian. But we get set in our ways and we walk past. No fault of our own. It's human nature. I don't tell you these things to convict you of them, but to make you aware of them. The next time you see somebody different that makes you uncomfortable, go say hi. You might be surprised to find what they say. You might be surprised to experience the holiness that waits in every corner, unbeknownst to the passerby.